We live in an age that's kind of driven by technology. Mr. Ball was mentioning GPS. It's a technology we've all become familiar with the last few years, and it's an amazing accomplishment and something that is very helpful in many ways. Another form of technology that we are accustomed to, most of us, is something called Google. Google is a computer program that can search through 4.5 billion pages of the internet in a fraction of a second and produce a list of millions of sources on almost any subject. For example, if you type the word broccoli into the search box on Google, in 1 second, Google will return to you a list of 94 million sources that you can link to learn more about your favorite food item. 94 million. Now, if you were to type in the phrase ice cream, in a little less than 3/4 of a second, you'll get a reference to 392 million websites that will tell you about ice cream. Now, maybe because of events the last week or so, you'd be interested in finding out about a nation called Uzbekistan. Not many of us know much about that place. Well, in 7/10 of a second, you'll find on Google 231 million links to websites that will tell you about Uzbekistan. And the thing is, you don't even have to know how to spell the name or the word. You just start typing in. You can kind of guess it begins with a U and then a Z and maybe a B, and Google will list a whole bunch of possible words. It's guessing what it is that you're about to ask about. Now, when I was in high school and later in college, I took some classes that required writing research papers. And I would go to the library after school for 2 to 3 hours at a time, 3 or 4 days a week, for a month or more, to do my research on whatever the topic was, poring through the card catalog, digging through the reference books in that section of the library to try to find information that would be useful for my research. Today, Google could find that for you in about 10 minutes and much more. I have nothing against libraries. I still enjoy the library, but basic research is something that you can do very differently now with just a home computer and a link to the internet. Google boasts about 1.8 billion unique users each month. 1.8 billion unique users each month. Now, that means that about every 4 months, the equivalent of the entire population of Earth uses Google. Of course, Google's not the only search engine. There are many others that do the same thing. They all use somewhat different algorithms and maybe have different approaches to the research that they do. They have different features, but they all scour the internet for information that you request. Of course, nobody's going to look up 300 million references to find out about broccoli or ice cream. When you get that list back from Google, you normally check the first 3 or 4, and that's about it. But Google is an interesting resource. It gives you a window into the internet, which itself is a hodgepodge of data. The internet is man's attempt to catalog everything we know about everything. All the information there is on virtually any subject you can think of, and a lot that you can't. And search engines are supposed to help you find your way around the internet. It reminds me of a statement that Solomon made. He said that the making of many books, there is no end. And we certainly can appreciate that. There is no limit, no end to the number of books that have been published. It's an infinite number, it seems. And you can go on, again, online to someplace like Amazon and find tens and hundreds of millions of books to sort through. And today we might also add that of the making of websites and internet pages, there's no end. Of course, Google taps into a seemingly infinite flow of information. Much of it is confusing and contradictory, and oftentimes what you find on the internet is even wrong. I suppose there are still some who believe that if it's on the internet, it must be true, but most of us understand better than that. It's a fantastic resource, the internet, and you have to be careful how you use it, but it can be so very useful. When my wife and I were traveling for the Feast of Tabernacles, we were in South Africa, and for most of the 3 weeks that we were there, I did not have Wi-Fi, and so I was without an internet connection for most of the time we were there. And frankly, I was lost. It was difficult to find any American news on South African television, especially sports. They're into these weird sports, cricket, soccer, rugby, dominating their sports. You couldn't find what was happening in the Major League playoffs or the National Football League. Anyway, without the internet, I was pretty lost as we were traveling, or looking just to try to keep up with some of the things we were interested in at home. But no search engine is going to give you all the answers that you might be looking for. Another example. In less than 1 second, Google will give you reference to 380 million websites with information on the subject of wisdom. If you follow some of those links, you'll be able to read about and research and maybe learn some information about wisdom, but you're not going to find wisdom on the internet. Google cannot bring that to your computer. Now, I bring this up because today, as we've mentioned, we begin the Teen Speech Club for another season. Today is the first of 7 meetings that we have scheduled for this year. Now, in each club meeting, we include a Bible study, usually between 15 to 30 minutes in length. I ask the teens to read an article or two and to answer some questions in a study guide, and then we talk it over as part of the meeting. And I try to tie these Bible studies together into a theme, into a series of studies that are related. The theme we're going to establish for the club this year is the practical application of godly wisdom. How to use godly wisdom in our lives. Now, the Bible is filled with information about wisdom, and you don't need Google to find your way through it. In our studies this season, we're going to focus on one particular book in the Bible, which is known as a book of wisdom, and that will be the book of Proverbs. I appreciated the sermonette topic this afternoon, had no idea what Mr. Ball was going to be speaking about, but what he gave was an excellent sample of a practical lesson that we can learn from the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is structured with the first 9 chapters serving as an introduction to the Proverbs that are presented. The first 9 chapters are an introduction, and then chapters 10 through 31 contain Solomon's collection of wisdom and of Proverbs. What I want to do today, as we begin this new club year together, as we begin to focus in the club on the subject of the lessons from the book of Proverbs, I want to introduce that series by reviewing with you several chapters in the introduction of the book. The title of the sermon today is Meet the Proverbs. We're going to see as we review this portion of the book that there is an emphasis on the importance of young people learning the lessons that are presented. But the lessons apply to all, to every age group, to all of us in all of our circumstances. The Proverbs apply throughout the ages to different cultures, different circumstances, different periods of time. The Proverbs contain universal truth that is practical in its application. The Proverbs are an excellent way to introduce to young people God's truth and how to make it work in your life. But it is an important and excellent guide for all of us throughout our lives. Let's begin in Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. And we'll read here since we're kind of wrapping this around this teen speech club concept, we'll read what is the SPS of the book of Proverbs, the specific purpose statement of the book of Proverbs. We'll find it beginning in verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Here's the purpose of these Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. It's interesting that in this introduction to the book, Solomon references both young people and those who are older. The young man, it mentions in verse 4, and then just simply verse 5, a wise man. I think this hints initially or right away that this is a book that's written for not just young people, but for all people. Although there is an emphasis that we'll focus on today on teaching principles and wisdom to young people. A couple of things to point out. Verse 4, for example, it says to give prudence to the simple. Prudence is not a word we use a lot anymore. The word prudence basically means foresight. To give the ability to consider or look ahead. It says to the simple. Now, that's not an insult. The word simple just simply means those who are inexperienced. Those who may be still at a point in life where they're somewhat naive and haven't had a lot of years of experience behind them. So it's a major or primary purpose of the book is to give knowledge and discretion, prudence, foresight, understanding, in particular to young people, but again, applicable to all. It's a book of wisdom, instruction, understanding, and insight. It tells us how to live in righteous, with judgment and with equity. So my point today will be to emphasize how practical and relevant the lessons are that we find in the book of Proverbs. These Proverbs are nuggets of treasure, and they teach realistic and sensible, useful principles of living. We can consider Proverbs to be a user's manual for life. An emphasis is given on developing wisdom. As I've mentioned before, and that again was touched on in the sermonette, a simple definition, and my favorite definition for wisdom, is simply to be skilled at life. To know how to live. To know how to make decisions. To know how to weigh a situation and come to a proper action. To be skilled at living. Now, the first 9 chapters of this book provide, as I said, an introduction to the Book of Wisdom. It shows us the value and importance of learning and of teaching, the importance of parents teaching, the importance of young people and teens and children learning. And it shows us how wisdom can become the foundation of our lives. As you read through these first 9 chapters, it's interesting. It kind of goes back and forth, and it almost seems to kind of not be structured in an organized manner. It sometimes repeats certain principles that you've read in a previous chapter. Part of that is because the book of Proverbs is written essentially as poetry. And poetry is written in a different, organized differently than we would the spoken or the regular language you typically use. It doesn't come across very well as poetry because of the translation from Hebrew into English. But we'll find that there are some essential basic principles in these 9 chapters that we can focus on and we'll see repeated throughout this section. And today I'm going to highlight 4. 4 essential or basic lessons that we find woven through these initial chapters in the book of Proverbs. So let's get into it. The first one, the first lesson or general teaching we can see here in this section of the book. The introduction to Proverbs emphasizes parents teaching their children. There's an emphasis on parents teaching their children. It illustrates then the importance of doing so, and there's an implicit lesson as well of the children or teens or young people being willing to be taught by their parents. Now it becomes complicated because as we grow older, we are less willing, it seems, to be taught. We begin to have ideas and thoughts and opinions of our own. We reach our own conclusions, but we also can see, as is illustrated and emphasized here, the value and importance of being one who is willing to be taught and also being one who is willing to teach. In the opening chapters of the book here, we find the phrase, "my son," is used 14 times. It's repeated 14 times. So again, there's clearly an emphasis that this instruction is, in this case, a father to his son. And the phrase, "my children," is used another 4 times. So we see the emphasis that we find here throughout this section. Let's look at a couple of examples. The importance of parents teaching and young people learning. Back to chapter 1, we'll pick it up in verse 8. Chapter 1, verse 8. It says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother. For they will be a graceful ornament on your neck, on your head, and chains around your neck." That sounds maybe like it's like you're on a leash of some sort, you know, like you take your dog for a walk and you put this collar around his neck so you can jerk him around and control him. And that's not what it means at all. The instruction that parents provide are like a beautiful piece of jewelry, a graceful ornament. And the chain about your neck is like a gold chain, again, an ornamental piece of jewelry, not something that is there to control in a negative ways. You might think of a leash or something that binds you and locks you in a place. But it is a beautiful and expensive and valuable piece of jewelry. And this is the importance of what parents can teach their children, that what they teach, what they provide, the instruction that they give can be something that our young people can wear, in a sense, proudly, that they recognize the value of, and they see the importance of, and they appreciate. Down to chapter 6, verse 20. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20. Again, it says, "My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. There's an emphasis, as you read through here, that a lot of emphasis on father teaching his son. But I think it's clear that the point that's being made is not just a father teaching his son. It's about parents teaching their children. Father and mother are both mentioned in these two verses we've looked at. And it's not just, the instruction is not just from a father to his son. Now, maybe the emphasis is here because Solomon was thinking of things that he would teach his son because his son would someday be king. So there was a special training that he would provide and want his son to have. But of course, what he taught, applies to parents and children in a more universal sense. Mothers and daughters, fathers and sons. The teaching of God's way to the next generation is the responsibility of parents. Nothing will be more important to us as parents than to give our children the opportunity to be skilled at life. There are other verses here that emphasize the parents teaching their children. Let's go back to chapter 2, verse 1. Chapter 2, verse 1. Again, it says, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you." Relates to that idea of the teaching, of the instruction, the help that parents can provide to their young children and teens and young adults as being of high value, to be something to be treasured. Implicit also, of course, is the effort that parents would need to put into the teaching of their children. Being a parent is not an easy thing. We have our own responsibilities. We are busy with our own things we need to take care of. But one of the things that is important for us to be willing to take the time for, even though sometimes it doesn't seem to be something we do have time for, is to be willing to teach and provide the instruction that will be helpful to our children. One thing we understand about our children, our teens, especially in the world we live in now, is that there are a lot of voices out there trying to be the one to teach them values. They learn values or offered different sets of values from many different sources. From their teachers at school, from their friends at school, from entertainment, from role models. There are all kinds of voices out there that are trying to instruct our children. The primary instruction must come from the parents and to some extent from the grandparents. We should have the most influence over our young people. Satan wants to take that over. Satan wants to give that to somebody else. Someone whose views and ideas are liberal, that are not based on God's law at all, that are based on human reasoning, and that we as adults recognize would lead someone in the wrong direction. But those who are less experienced, as we saw here in chapter 1, and again, I use the word not meaning to be insulting, but to the simple, those who haven't yet had the experience, don't have the background to understand, can easily be led astray. As parents, it's a very heavy responsibility to be the one to teach our children. Let's move on to another general theme we find here in these first chapters of Proverbs. This introduction to Proverbs emphasizes keys to growing in wisdom. It emphasizes keys to growing in wisdom, and I'm going to point out two of those keys as we continue. Again, you're not going to find this on the internet. Google's not going to take you someplace to tell you what it is you need to teach so that your young people can grow up and grow and develop in wisdom. Now, we gain some kinds of experience that people, I think, mislabel to be wisdom. We gain some kinds of experience of just what we do in life. And you learn not to do certain things and you do to do other things because you get burned a time or two along the way. I'm not talking about the wisdom when it comes to choosing a job or buying a car or investing in real estate. Those are different forms of experience or wisdom, quote unquote. I'm talking about godly wisdom. Godly wisdom is something that needs to come from Him, from God. Parents have the responsibility to pass that along. Youth sometimes get tired, young people get tired of being told all the time what to do or what to think. And yet, part of the responsibility we have is to share God's values. Now, as teens develop in their years, they learn to follow the direction of God's way, to follow the Holy Spirit as it is leading them, as it is bringing them to the point where someday they'll be ready to be baptized, but the Holy Spirit works with them along the way. But it doesn't take away the responsibility and the need for the parents to show our young people the way that they can grow in wisdom. Chapter 1, verse 7 says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The starting point for beginning to learn this wisdom that the book of Proverbs has to offer is to fear God. Fearing God is something that we can spend a lot of time talking about. We can define it pretty simply, though. To fear God means to honor Him, to respect, and to yield to God. To honor God, to respect God, and to yield to God. To fear God means to accept Him as the supreme authority in your life. Now that sounds pretty simple, but it isn't. Our nature struggles against that. We want to be that supreme authority. We want the answer to be something that appeals to us, or something that someone has told us that we find to be interesting, or that we would like to follow or pursue. We want to be the one who decides. But we will not grow in true godly wisdom until we accept Him as the supreme authority. And that there will be times when He's going to have some instruction for us that we're not going to take to right away. It's not going to be natural to us. But if we fear God, if we respect Him, if we yield to Him, if we realize that He's the one who created us and He's the one who knows how life is supposed to be lived, then we're headed in the right direction. It's the beginning. It's the starting point. Chapter 8, verse 13. Proverbs 8, verse 13. Another definition here says that the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Again, that sounds pretty obvious, doesn't it? Pretty easy. But the problem is, or the thing is, I guess, by nature we don't necessarily hate evil. There are certain things that maybe appeal to us that would be outside of God's law that we would at least have an interest in. But to fear God means to hate the things He hates, to hate those things that are in violation of His way, of His will, of His law. So the starting point is to fear God, to accept Him as the supreme authority, and to recognize that He's the one who will define good and evil. He's the one that we need to look to for that understanding. Let me give you two keys here to growing in wisdom that are given here in this section of Proverbs. The first is to be teachable. I touched on that already, but let's be specific. The first key to growing in wisdom is to be teachable. Chapter 1, verse 7, we read already the first part, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. A foolish person will reject the instruction, will not be willing to be taught, will not be willing to receive from our parents or from God's teaching in His Word and other ways that we receive it. To refuse that is foolishness, because it is taking us away from the path we want to be on. We must be teachable. Here in chapter 1, beginning in verse 20, there's a section here that I won't take the time to read. It continues on through the end of the chapter. But in verse 20, it begins the thought. It says, "Wisdom cries aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses. At the openings of the gates in the city, she speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity?" The point is that wisdom is all around us if we're sensitive to it and are willing to learn from it, if we are teachable. Throughout this section, by the way, we find wisdom referred to as a female. Wisdom, she raises her voice, and there are other verses that use that same gender. It's a grammatical thing. The word she in the Hebrew language is a female gender in a grammatical sense, so the female pronoun is used. It does help, though, in a way to kind of personify or to give a make wisdom into a being, a person who's relating to us or communicating to us. Wisdom is out there. Wisdom is there for those who are willing to learn, those who are no longer going to remain inexperienced or simple or naive, but are willing to learn. The thought of wisdom reaching out to those who are willing to respond continues, as I said, here through the rest of the chapter. The same principle is also illustrated in chapter 8. Chapter 8, verse 1. Again, wisdom, the point being, is all around us if we're willing to hear it, if we're willing to receive it. And that's not always an easy thing to do for any of us, not just for younger folks, but for those of us who are older as well. We tend to lean on our own thoughts and understanding. Chapter 8, verse 1. "Does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on the top of a high hill." Verse 3, "She cries out by the gates at the entry to the city." Verse 4, "To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. You simple ones, learn prudence." Understand prudence. Understand looking at a situation from a godly perspective and looking ahead and applying God's principles to the things that we do in our lives. We don't need to remain simple. We all start out that way. We all start out inexperienced and naive, but we can learn through teaching if we're sensitive to it. Sometimes it's said that the most effective teacher is experience. I see the logic behind that statement, because it's something you learn pretty strongly if you experience something. But I also would say that the most painful teacher is experience. The most difficult way to learn is through experience. The best way to learn is through hearing the words of wisdom and accepting them and applying them. So it's important to be willing to receive or to be instruction or wisdom and to be teachable. That's a theme that runs through this introductory portion of the book of Proverbs. The second key that we'll emphasize for now is that we need to seek and respond to instruction. We need to seek and respond to instruction. Again, a lot of times we tend to try to want to avoid it. We don't want to be told. We don't want someone else to tell us. We don't want to learn things that go against what we do want. But it's important to be willing to seek that input and then respond to it. Chapter 2, verse 1. chapter 2, verse 1. Again, my son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands, so that you incline your ear to wisdom, and you apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment, and lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Notice the verbs that are used here in these first four or five verses. If you receive and treasure. In other words, well, Solomon didn't put it this way, but to receive and treasure means no more rolling of the eyes. No more, whatever. No more dismissal of important lessons that are offered to us, but rather to receive them, to embrace them, and to treasure, to value, to incline yourself. To incline means to lean toward, to lean into, so that you, it shows you're wanting to hear and to listen. It says, cry out and lift up your voice. In other words, again, seek, look for, be open to advice and the opportunities that we can learn. Of course, seek it as a treasure, something of high value to us. So it says in verse 1, if you do these things, verse 5, then you will understand. If then is a principle that you've probably learned in math classes or maybe in computer programming classes. A computer program will only advance to the next step when a certain condition is met. If A, then B. It's a basic principle. When that condition is not met, the program either halts or it goes in a different direction. That's the principle that's being highlighted here. If you are willing to seek and receive and learn from instruction, then you will have that understanding. It's a basic principle that we consider or deal with on many different levels. Receive it, seek it, respond to it. Turn to chapter 7. Chapter 7, verse 1. Proverbs 7, verse 1. My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands and live, and my law as the apple of your eye. The apple of your eye. That's an idiom that I think we're familiar with. The apple of your eye is something that you treasure and value above everything else. The literal translation doesn't make any sense, but that's what the idiom means. That's what the words mean. It's something that you value and treasure above everything else. If God's law becomes the apple of your eye, then you will guard it closely and value it as a treasure. You'll keep it close by, keep it within. And as you do that, as we saw from previous passages, we will learn godly wisdom. We'll learn how to live. So, keys to growing in wisdom include being teachable and seeking and valuing the instruction and the wisdom that is offered to us. Third area we'll consider here as a general introduction to the book of Proverbs. In these chapters, we find an emphasis that godly wisdom protects us from disaster. Godly wisdom protects us from disaster. A lot of people, frankly, ruin their lives at a very early point. at a very early stage. They can make mistakes that maybe they can be forgiven for, but physically may not recover from. Applying godly wisdom protects us from disasters in our lives. Chapter 1, verse 10. Chapter 1, verse 10. We'll talk first of all about learning to resist peer pressure. Resist peer pressure. If we can resist the pressure that others put upon us to go in the wrong direction, then we can be protected from disaster. Chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Don't go along with it. Goes on to give an example. If they come and say, let's go commit a crime. Let's lie in wait and shed blood and lurk secretly for someone and swallow them up. Let's go devise some criminal activity and carry it out for our own benefit. Now, the wording that's used here is maybe a little different from what you might experience, but there are situations where it is important to resist the pressure that others will put on you to go in a way that is against God's law. There are all kinds of opportunities to go in the wrong direction, and there are all kinds of people who will be happy to lead you in that direction. But simply put, as it says in verse 10, if sinners entice you, don't do it. Do not consent. Have the wisdom, the ability, the strength, and the foresight. Okay, there's the prudence again, to realize that giving in to peer pressure is not going to have a positive result. Now, I'm talking about negative peer pressure. That's what's illustrated here. There's something called positive peer pressure, and hopefully you'll find that within your friends and your family in God's church. But we're talking about negative peer pressure. Chapter 4, verse 19. Chapter 4, verse 19. It says, the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. Those who would lead us in the wrong direction, it's like Jesus talked about. This is the blind leading the blind. And when that happens, you're all going to wind up falling in the ditch. The way of the wicked is darkness. They trip over things in life that they never knew were there. Well, you know, you can turn to other passages that speak of God's law as being light. God's law lights the path of your life. So you're not going to trip on those things that others are stumbling on. Verse 20, my son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. If we keep within ourselves the knowledge, the understanding of God's way and not give in to other kinds of pressure, then we will be on the path that will lead to life. Back up to verse 14. Chapter 4, verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Don't travel on it. Turn away. Pass on. For they do not sleep unless they've done evil. There are those, again, who would pressure us to live as they do, to make decisions that they make, and that would take us on a path, on a road that we do not want to travel, because it leads to destruction. So, the principle that's given here in these chapters is to beware and to avoid or resist peer pressure. Another principle that shows how godly wisdom will prevent us from prevent disaster in our lives is to simply beware of temptation. Beware of temptation. Several times in this passage, in this section of Proverbs, there's an illustration of young men falling prey to seduction and being led into a situation that will only ruin their lives. Let's look at one in chapter 2, verse 16. Chapter 2, verse 16. It's talking about how wisdom will help direct our lives. And we'll just pick it up in verse 16 in the middle of this thought. It delivers you, wisdom delivers you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. Verse 18, for her house leads down to death, and her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the path of life. That's a thought I mentioned a little bit ago, that there are situations which we can get ourselves into that will change our lives from that point on. Things that we may not be able to recover from. As we grow older, we have more freedom, more opportunity. We think more for ourselves. We do more for ourselves. But with that comes a lot of responsibility. And there's some hazards there. Applying godly wisdom will prevent disaster. Don't follow those paths that lead to that destruction. Now, the specific example here is of a young man falling prey to an immoral, seductive woman. But the principle is more general than that. There are all kinds of ways that Satan will try to tempt, entice, seduce into his way of life. Recognize temptation when you see it, and recognize that your life really could be at stake. Don't fall victim to temptation. Apply the wisdom of God's way of life to avoid that disaster. Another principle we can apply here is that, you know, when you look around and you see people who seem to be having a great time and doing everything that they want to do, they seem to get away with it. Seems like they're not doing what you're trying to do in your life, but they're getting away with the lifestyle that they've chosen. Godly wisdom to help us avoid disaster would remind us not to worry about those who seem to get away with the way that they live. It's not going to continue. Chapter 3, verse 31. Chapter 3, verse 31. It says, don't envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways. Don't envy those who seem to have their way in life. Don't envy those who are troublesome and bothersome and hurtful to others. Don't envy the way that they live and the choices they've made. Verse 32, for the perverse person is an abomination to God. God weighs our actions. God knows our choices. God, it says, hates those. They're an abomination to him. But his secret counsel is with the upright. Sometimes the way he will bless us as we follow him may not be as open as what others seem to enjoy or quote-unquote enjoy or get away with in their lives. But God is with those who are upright, those who are doing their best to live according to and to follow that godly wisdom that they're learning. Verse 33, the curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the just. Surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame will be the legacy of fools. Eventually, even those who seem to be getting away with their perverse way of life are going to have to pay a price. Because what they're doing is something that God condemns, and a way that God will lead to being cursed by God rather than being blessed by God. So, another example of how applying the wisdom of God in our lives will help us to avoid disaster, the very negative results that can come about if we ignore or don't choose to follow the wisdom that is offered to us. So let's end on a positive note. The fourth point that we'll emphasize here from this portion of the book of Proverbs, the introduction to Proverbs emphasizes that godly wisdom leads to security and peace. Godly wisdom leads to security and peace. We all want that in our lives. We live in a world that's unstable, in a world that is filled with difficulty and failure. Godly wisdom will lead us into a life of security and peace. Chapter 3, verse 10. Chapter 3, verse 10, talking about how we honor God by the way that we live, including the way we look to Him, the way we honor Him with our possessions, or we use our resources in a way that pleases God. If we do that, then your barns will be filled with plenty. There are rewards that come to those who are willing to submit to God, to fear Him, and to follow Him, to honor Him. Your barns will be filled with plenty. Your vats will overflow with new wine. Don't despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest His correction. For whom the Lord loves, He corrects, just as a father, the son in whom He delights. Happy is the person who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. Her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain more than fine gold. She's more precious than rubies, and all the things you can desire cannot be compared to her. The result of applying wisdom in our lives goes far beyond anything that anyone else can gain through any other effort. God's wisdom brings blessings and happiness. And when we live by them, then we will receive the blessings of God. Verse 21, talking about, again, the application of wisdom in our lives. Don't let it depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you won't be afraid. You'll be secure, and you'll be living in a way that's going to be, again, stable and secure. Wisdom gives us that opportunity, that privilege in life. We already talked about the importance of valuing instruction and wisdom as jewelry. Chapter 6, verse 20. Bind the instruction of your father and mother on your neck as beautiful jewelry, and something that you're pleased and, in a sense, almost proud of, that you have that is the important value in your life. Wisdom will allow you, again, to avoid pitfalls that are common in life. It leads to wisdom, or to security and safety. We avoid the pitfalls that others tumble into. Chapter 2, verse 10. Chapter 2, verse 10, when wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you, understanding will keep you, to deliver you from the way of evil and from those who speak perverse things. Wisdom will keep us on a way, on a path of life that is secure and safe, and will avoid the pitfalls, the difficulties that others tumble into. As I said, we saw in chapter 4, verse 19, that the wicked are living in darkness and they don't even know what they're tripping over in life. We find security and peace when we're willing to accept the instruction that God offers to us through His Word, through His instruction, through His way, and through our families. Chapter 3, verse 11. Chapter 3, verse 11. My son, do not despise the chastening of God. Don't despise correction. It's easy to resent, to not be responsive to instruction. It's not an easy path to follow in that sense, but it is the only way that will truly lead to the security and the peace and the results that we want in life. If you want to find facts or data or information, you can use a search engine like Google to find information on almost anything almost instantly. But all the information you'll find in all those sites and all the books you might research in are really of no particular value unless they help you make sense of life. They help you gain the knowledge that you will benefit from to give your life meaning and to give your life direction. That's what the book of Proverbs is about. And that's what these opening chapters emphasize. Let's conclude. I think we may have already read this, but in chapter 2, verse 6. Chapter 2, verse 6. The preceding verses talk about receiving and responding to and searching for instruction and wisdom. We come to verse 6. It says that, and I'm reading from the Living Bible here for these last few verses. It says, "For the Lord grants wisdom. His every word is a treasure of knowledge and understanding. He grants good sense to the godly, to his saints. He's their shield, protecting them and guarding their pathway. He shows how to distinguish right from wrong, how to find the right decision every time." Skill at life is what God provides through the wisdom that he grants. We're going to focus on the book of Proverbs for our Bible studies for the most part in the teen club. But there's much, much more in that book than we'll be able to cover in those few classes or meetings. But I do hope that in doing so, we'll be able to provide a sampling of the practical day-to-day principles and the wisdom that we can learn from this book. And hopefully that'll encourage or motivate further personal study as well, lessons you can learn from that portion of Scripture. The book of Proverbs is a treasure trove of godly wisdom. A treasure trove is a hidden store of valuable items. A treasure trove is like buried treasure. That's what the book of Proverbs can be for us. We can dig into it, we can dig through it, we can search it carefully to find that treasured wisdom and knowledge to wear as beautiful jewelry. The book of Proverbs is filled with practical and relevant principles for young people and for adults alike. The book of Proverbs provides for us words of life.